Good morning, listeners, and welcome to this week's Ag Report. I'm Jim Finn. Later on in the programme, I will be talking to Brian Ronan from Embrace Farm. I will also be talking to Con Trass about this season's strawberries, and to Imelda Walsh from the IFA in North Tipperary about the rally last Friday, and also their protest outside the Dáil last Wednesday. And my final guest this morning will be John Harrigan, and John will be telling us all about carbon recovery. But my first guest is Donica Dowling from Chagas. Good morning, Donica, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
You're with me to talk about breeding. So we're approximately midway through the breeding season. How is breeding currently on dairy farms?
Yeah, so look, at the moment, Jim, it is going fairly well. From all reports on farms, I suppose we were lucky enough in the spring the way it turned out. The majority of your listeners would have maybe started breeding from, I suppose, the last week of April into May. And the weather so far has been kind, you know.
Yeah.
So for anyone that kind of started breeding, we say the 1st of May, they would have hit their 6 weeks, probably around the 12th of June. So for a 12-week season, they're more or less halfway through. And it's a great chance now, I suppose, to just take a half step back and see how the breeding's going. And, you know, is there any changes we need to make? Any problem cows to sort out and what to do with those at the moment, really.
Right. So more or less there, you at the end, you were touching, you know, on what farmers can do to ensure that they have a successful breeding season.
Yeah, exactly. So look, I suppose what we look for really is after 6 weeks to have 100% of our cows served.
Yeah.
Now, if that's not the case, you know, and I suppose there's always maybe three or four cows that just haven't made it for one reason or another. And now is the chance, I suppose, to kind of give these cows the extra attention and see what's going on. So I suppose the first thing we'd always recommend is if you're 6 weeks through and you haven't hit this target of 100%, you know, maybe find out which cows are not served and then possibly getting the scanner in to see, you know, is there something going on inside this cow that we're not sure of? You know, maybe she's cystic, maybe she's dirty from a previous calving or whatever. And you know, it makes management easier once we know what's happening. Now, what's been working well, I suppose, on farms recently in the area is, you know, for late calvers or possibly some tin cows that are finding it hard to cycle, some of your listeners have put the select group of cows on once a day milking. So really, they're taking the pressure off them. You know, they're much easier to convert the energy onto their back, and in turn, then they're going to cycle easier. So, you know, this seems to work well to get those cows back in. And I suppose it's important just for your listeners to realise as well that for every missed heat, you know, there is a value there or a financial consequence of about €150 per cow, you know.
Yeah.
So going in and being proactive on these cows, there is a financial gain to be made. And it's only a select few, you know, it's only maybe picking out these 5, 6, 7 cows and just getting these back on track, you know.
Let's move on to grass growth has been phenomenal, to put it mildly. What advice would you have for farmers to follow to get the most from this grass that's growing so strongly at the moment?
Yeah. Well, look, I suppose, firstly, it's a great complaint to have. You know, over the spring there, we were kind of looking for grass and suddenly, almost overnight, we're looking at fields full of grass, you know. So it's absolutely great to have the headache of wondering how to manage it. Now, managing all this grass is a task in itself because keeping the quality in front of the cows is very important in terms of, as we touched on, breeding targets, but also keeping quality milk, you know, in terms of solids and yields. So it's very important that we do manage it right. So firstly, I'd say every farmer should be walking the farm, you know, every 5 to 7 days at least. Now, a lot of your listeners would be using PastureBase, which is a grass measuring app, and it gives them all the figures and details to make managing the grass easier. But even if some of your listeners are not into that technology, even just walking it every 5 to 7 days, you get an idea of what's coming ahead, and it makes it easier to make the decisions of what we're going to talk about now, which is basically, can we bale paddocks? Can we skip this field? and trying to avoid, I suppose, topping after the cows and wasting grass. So when we have this grass here, we want to utilise it. We all remember the couple of droughts we had in years gone by, and unfortunately we had to import feed, which wouldn't even be as good as the quality feed we can produce here. So rather than topping grass after cows and wasting it, if we can bale up these paddocks that are gone too strong, skip them, bale them up, and move the cows into the right covers, or we're talking maybe 1,300-1,400 covers, it works out better for everyone in the long run. You know, you have super surplus silage here that we can feed back if needed, you know, at the shoulders of the year. But also we're gone back into the right covers. So we're hitting these 1,300-1,400 kilo covers that cows are going to milk well off. You're going to get good solids, you know, good yields, and will help breeding and fertility as well.
Okay, and Donnacha, from you know, what you've heard and what you've observed, has there been a good bulk in the silage, or has it been a little bit back from previous years?
So it's been a little bit strange, I suppose, in the fact that everyone is almost 2 weeks behind cutting, you mm-hmm. know, so where people would have maybe cut in kind of the 20th of May, they suddenly found themselves with nearly in the first couple of days in June. So they were later cutting, and that was just due to the slow growth we had during April. You know, crops were slow mm-hmm. to start. But, you know, bulk did come. Now, I'd say farmers were proactive in the sense that the majority of them were able to get it while the quality was still good. You know, like yeah. the heading date on a lot of those grasses would have been the first couple of days in June. And it's critical to get in there before this crop goes to seed. And the majority of farmers didn't manage that. Now, look, we all know contractors are busy and it didn't work out everywhere. But it did work out for the majority of farmers. And yeah, silage pits and are plenty in them. They did bulk up well, and the majority of it is good quality as well. So all in all, I'd say the first cut, you know, farmers are happy yeah. with it. It was a good cut, in fairness.
Okay, and moving on then to soil fertility and fertilisers. What should farmers be following over the next couple of weeks, Donnacha?
Yeah, so I suppose, look, you know, the question is often, you know, made at this time of the year. I've loads of grass. I'm taking out surplus bales. Do I need to bother going to fertiliser? How much should I go with? And how much is enough? So, look, the first thing, I suppose, is in terms of fertiliser following your cows, we'd sort of recommend around this time of the year 1 unit of nitrogen per day. Okay, so to put very simple, if you have a 20-day rotation, you're following the cows with 20 units of nitrogen. That's enough. It keeps good quality grass ahead of them. It'll drive it on, and it's just enough to get the most money for or the most grass for your money. And to follow up that, then, I suppose if you're going for second cut silage, you know, the majority of your listeners, if they're looking for a good crop, they'd want to be going with maybe 80 units of nitrogen, sort of 12 to 14 units of phosphorus, and another about 80 units of potassium. Now, the majority of this P's and K's can be gained from slurry. So we'd always recommend going back, I suppose, 2,500 gallons of slurry back on the silage ground. You're hoping to take a second cut off. And then, I suppose, just topping it up with some nitrogen in the form of maybe a bag and a half of protected urea plus sulfur. And this will give you a good crop of silage, you know. So I suppose that's just some simple fertiliser advice. Obviously, it varies from farm to farm. But just to put it simple, I suppose, you know, it's a unit a day if you're following the cows. And then if you're going for second cut silage, 2,500 gallons of slurry plus your bag and a half of protected urea.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, moving on to something else that's very important, and we should keep it at the front of our minds, particularly on farms, and that is farm safety. I'm quite sure you would have a little bit of advice for people there as well before we finish this morning, Donnacha.
Exactly. So look, it's a busy time on farms, you know, as you mentioned there, with silage going on. We're coming into school holiday season now where there'll be more kids around. And I suppose, look, it's an area where we're trying to be proactive in every year. And it's just important to be vigilant when you're on farms. You know, like, we're always rushing. We can take a risk here or there. But I suppose just to be careful, and even for farmers to just take a step back and look at their own farm, what they might be used to, you know, they know where there's a problem or where the slats aren't fully covered or whatever. The next person walking in might know that, or a child might know that. And just to be very careful and to spot these early and just, you know, make arrangements that you're as health and safety conscious as possible, really, you know. And that's very important as we do enter these summer months.
Okay, well, look at Donica. Thanks very much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Donica Dowling from Chagas here in Thurles. Stay tuned, because Donica has mentioned farm safety. Next week, we have Farm Safety Week. And as well as that, coming up to the end of the week, we have the event to remember all those who lost their lives on farm. And I will be talking to Brian Rowan from Embrace Farm about that particular event that he runs every single year. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Brian Rowan. And Brian is the founder of Embrace Farm. And their annual commemoration to honour the people who unfortunately lost their lives on a farm accident, and in some way to give consolation to those who are left behind, is taking place on Sunday the 27th of June, and it is their 8th year doing this. Good morning, Brian, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Jim. You're very welcome.
How is Embrace Farm getting on? And then we'll get on to talking about the event on the 27th.
Yeah, I suppose, Jim, it's going from strength to strength, really. And unfortunately, more and more new families are eligible to join us every year, as these farm accidents don't seem to be stopping.
Right, yeah. And we've had a few this year, but I suppose there's less this year than there was at this time last year and the year before.
You know, every year usually averages out, so that could mean we could be in for a spate of them from here on
right,
to the end of the year, but hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Okay. Now, of course, the event itself, you know, it has to go virtual, I presume.
Yeah, we're going virtual. There will be a small few in the church. We're going by government guidelines there, and max 50 people in the church. So there's a couple of local families attending, all right, but we will be live streamed on through our website.
How was it then received last year when you had to go virtually?
Yeah, it was amazing to see the production team that was there to do the recording, and it went out live through our website last year as well, and also RT very kindly showed it the week after on RT for the service that year, and they came back to us and they're doing the same again this year. They were very impressed with it, and they got, I think, over 100,000 views or something
right.
through RT, and I think it was about 50,000 logged on to our website on the day.
Right, so I had forgotten that it had gone out the week after on RTE, you know, and it's wonderful that they're highlighting it. Now, also, of course, you're coming directly after, we'd say, Farm Safety Week as well, so there is a big emphasis on farm safety and the consequences of a farm accident all happening at the one time.
That's the thing, and this year our campaign is the Here For You campaign, which honours the people and communities, businesses who have supported us the last number of years and those impacted by farm accidents. You know, without community support out there, we wouldn't be able to stay going, and the numbers of fundraisers that's been done for us, even through COVID times, people switched their fundraising to virtual events, and it's amazing the amount of money that was brought in, and that's all that helps us keep us going. It also helps the survivors group that we have going to see, you know, it's encouragement for them as well to see people are working in the background helping us.
I know the organisation, as you said, is going from strength to strength and getting bigger and bigger, but it's also costing you more and more every year, and you don't get an awful lot of help, or do you get any from the state?
No, we don't get any state funding at the minute.
Right.
You know, you might get 1,000 here, 1,000 there, but it's mainly through mocker clubs have been tremendous, and especially the mocker clubs in Tipperary, they've done some massive fundraising for us there. Like the Devil's Bit mocker did the cycle there from Mellon to Mizzen, raised a substantial amount of money for us, and an awful lot of clubs there at local level have done smaller fundraisers, but every 10 euros is 10 euros more than we had last week, and it's just tremendous to get that level of support, and it helps keep us going as well.
Yeah, and of course the last time that you and I spoke face to face was at National Ploughing Championships, where the Vay AI raised quite a bit of money for you.
That's right, that was a simple thought out plan, but it brought in some amount of money, because, you know, semen sales are happening every year anyway. And, you know, it was the Vay's generosity, and then the farmers, of course, got behind it by buying more straws, and it brought in a massive amount of money to us as well. And we always are blessed with one big fundraiser every year, and that's kind of keeps us ticking over till the next year.
Okay, and have you plans for a big fundraiser for 2021?
Nothing yet. There's a couple of things, right? So, you know, hopefully before the end of the year, you might see more from us. All right.
So, what you'd be saying to me, or what we could be saying to the people listening to us this morning, Brian, is that if there's any business out there and they have a really good idea, or they wish to contribute, you would welcome any contribution that any business could give you to try to keep the organisation on the road, and above all, to try to give, as I said there at the beginning, a consolation to families who have lost a family member.
That's the thing, because, you know, the general public don't realise what families go through after losing a loved one, or even going through a severe farm accident where a farmer could have lost a leg or an arm or an eye. And we're there to support them if they need it. Some families don't need it, and that's fine. But other families, you know, they like meeting new families going through the same thing and being able to talk to them and share their feelings and saying, you know what, I'm going through the same as you, but I'm 4 or 5 years down the road and things will get a little bit better. You never forget the loss of a loved one, but you learn to deal with and accept it and cope a little bit better as time goes on. I found that myself. Dad is 9 years dead this week, and from a person that loved farming, it took me 5 years to get back to love of farming. I did it every day since Dad died, but I never enjoyed it. But after 5 years, I just, you know, things changed, and I said, you know what, I'm back enjoying what I love, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, and I suppose we could remind your listeners how your poor dad died. Like, you know, a very simple accident, really, truly, was just repairing a piece of machinery, and it came down on top of him.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of these accidents, unfortunately, are simple accidents. And if we could all just turn back the clock 30 seconds, things wouldn't have happened. But look, in our situation, that's what happened. Dad, he was taking a silage sorter apart and unfortunately came apart sooner than expected. And he received a blow to the side of the head, but got up and walked away. And about 15 minutes later, he was back in the house and he went unconscious. And after a brain scan that was sent to Dublin from Tullamore Hospital, they confirmed there was nothing they could do. He had a massive bleed in the brain, and we had to switch off life support then 3 days later.
And not an easy thing to do, and not something we would like to see any farm family doing this year, next year, or any year. Can I say to you? You talk about the bonds that people build between each other when they meet at events like your event on Sunday week, particularly when we're able to meet in person. You know, do those bonds, have they lasted? You know, the first people that you met the first year, 8 years ago, have they stayed in contact and in touch with each
other? They've stayed in contact, and there's a widows group going. They have their own WhatsApp group. There's a survivors group going. And then there's families that they swap phone numbers themselves. And I know some of them visit each other's houses. I know a couple of weekends ago, two of the widows headed off to Achill Island with camper vans with their kids, and they met up over there in Achill Island. And still, you know, there could be two of them talking this minute for all we know. And it's great to see that to just help each other out. You know, if one of them has a bad day and send a text in the WhatsApp group and saying, you know what, I'm finding today really tough, but maybe it could be the anniversary, they could get back 15 or 20 texts there in a matter of minutes saying, listen, you know, you'll get through the day. My loved one's anniversary was last week, and I find it tough, but the next day you feel that much better from it and stuff like that.
Okay, before I go, I suppose I can't not say something about your other half, Norma. She's been a strength to you the whole way through this particular process, not alone the loss of your dad, but in the setting up of Embrace Farm.
Absolutely, and we have she's now a tip woman, Catherine Collins, down there. She's married down outside Templemore, and she's working with the charity as well. And the two of them are running the day-to-day end of the charity. I've taken a step back and concentrated more on farm work, because I suppose that's where my love lies. But still, I love to be involved. I love, if the sooner we can get out to meet people again, the better, because, you know, we've met some lovely, lovely families across the years, and we have lifelong friendships built with them, including up in Northern Ireland as well. And we're going up doing a big launch up in Northern Ireland later on in the year, where they have rural support up there, supporting families for years, but now we're coming on board with them as well and doing the farm accident support as well up there.
Okay, look, it's absolutely great. Okay, just remind the listeners once again what is happening and at what time they can tune in to the World Wide Web to see this the ceremony that's taking place on the 27th.
Yeah, so we're on the 27th of June at 2 p.m. and they can log on to www.embracefarm.com and it'll be live streamed there. If they happen to miss it that day, it's RT have agreed to show it. I think it's 12 o'clock on the following Sunday.
Okay, well, look at Brian.
But just can I also say, Jim, if any families listening this morning have lost a loved one in the last few years, you know, be it in the last 3 years or the last 30 years, if we haven't got their name, they can drop us an email as well, so info@embracefarm.com, and we'll add their name to the list, which will be read out on the day.
Okay, well, look at Brian, thanks ever so much for joining us this morning. That, listeners, was Brian Rowan from Embrace Farm. As a matter of fact, he's the founder of Embrace Farm. And if you would like to contribute to the running of the organisation, why not make contact with Brian? He has given you his email address there, so there is absolutely no problem. And every small donation is more than welcome. And if there's anybody out there with a big one, please consider Brian when you're giving some money to a charity. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Con Trass from the Apple Farm. Con is with me to talk about strawberries. Bord Bia are trying to encourage us to eat strawberries. Would that be right, Con?
They are indeed. I suppose the mission of Bord Bia is to get us all to eat lots of things, but especially things that are produced in Ireland. And of course, at this time of year, strawberries are in their main season.
Right. Now, you are a strawberry producer amongst others, even though some of us wouldn't be as aware as others that you do produce strawberries. So, looking at strawberries 2021, what's the crop like?
So the crop is actually, from what I hear from some other growers and just around in general, the crop is very good, although it was somewhat delayed by the colder weather, which means that there will be a lot of fruit coming ripe around the same time in the next week or two. Because, of course, you know, when it did get warm, then the fruit that should have come earlier start ripening at the same time as the ones that you'd expect to come now, if you follow me.
Yeah.
So there could be quite a lot of strawberries around if people keep an eye out for them in the shops or what have you over the next while.
All the strawberries, so that are coming on stream, they're grown outdoors.
No, I'd say probably the majority of them are actually grown indoors nowadays. Okay. Probably about 60% indoors and about 40% outdoors. I suppose what happened was that you know growers in Wexford and in North County Dublin and in County Meath, you know, the kind of growers who traditionally grew strawberries, they became quite large. So there would be growers with 40 or 50 or 60 acres of strawberries, even, which is more than I even have of apples, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And so they ran out of rotational land, because when you grow strawberries, you know, you after you remove the strawberries, you might have to wait 10 years before you go back into the same field. You know, so if you've got 60 acres of strawberries, you might need 600 acres, you know, to cover your rotational land. So farmers that were growing those strawberries moved them indoors so that they could grow them in, you know, an artificial substrate. And I suppose the other part was that, you know, with summer rainfall and so on, it just became so expensive, you know, to lose a crop that growers decided to, you know, to produce them, at least some of them indoors to, you know, to kind of hedge their bets, I suppose, in case of a wet period during the summer. So I'd say about half, maybe a bit more than half of the strawberries are now grown indoors and about half outdoors, which is almost exactly what we have on our farm here as well. We've got indoors and outdoors as well.
The indoor ones then, of course, they mature and go to market earlier than the ones that you have grown outdoors.
Correct. Yes, exactly. So they're timed, I suppose, to be there early.
Yeah.
And then the outdoor ones will be starting to come in around now. And then the indoor ones will be timed for later in the year again. So most people with, you know, tunnels or glass houses would actually manage to get two crops out of the same space in the year. One early one and one late one, and then have an outdoor crop in the middle.
What has happened then with strawberries and their production, as I see, because I can remember people growing a lot of strawberries outdoors, but the season was very short. But now the season has been extended considerably at both ends.
Exactly, yes. I suppose the earliest guys that would have strawberries would be in kind of mild areas or whatever, and they might even heat the glasshouse or the tunnel a little bit, although they don't generally do that much, and they would have their first strawberries in April. Mm. And then I suppose that, you know, the normal tunnels or whatever would have some in May and, you know, kind of into June. The natural time for strawberries is June, July, just 8 weeks probably, really. So then anything you're getting back, you know, on into in August, and that again is going to be, you know, is not part of their normal behaviour, shall we say. So that's by farmers taking plants, you know, and planting them out later than you might normally do, and so on, to, you know, to extend the season. So it's really changed from being an 8 week harvest to easily a 6 month, maybe even a 7 month harvest at this stage.
The other thing that goes hand in hand with strawberries at this time of the year happens to be Wexford's new potatoes. Are we going to be seeing as much of these people who set up stalls on the side of the road in 2021?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. Certainly, I know a few growers who do that. You know, they're going ahead as per normal. Mm. So, unless there's a shortage of strawberries or something like that, you know, often if there is a shortage of strawberries, you know, those growers might find it easier to, you know, to send them to a wholesaler or to shop rather than having to distribute them themselves. So sometimes you'll see a little bit of a decline in the amount of strawberries, you know, on the roadside if there is a shortage. But right now there's no shortage, so I think we'll see them everywhere.
Coming to your own strawberries then, Con, what percentage of your strawberries will be eaten as fresh fruit? And what percentage of the strawberries will go into a preserve?
Yeah, well, we try to sell as many as we can fresh, but there will be days when we have strawberries left over. You know, it might be 5 or 10% of what we picked that day. And basically, what we do is the next day we take the tops off them and we stick them into the deep freeze, and they stay in the freezer then until we need them either for jam, or we also blend them into juice. So we do an apple and strawberry juice, and jam. So that's where they end up. So, you know, we would definitely need the best part of 10% of our crop for those two things, you know, during the course of the summer. But often it's at the very end of the summer, you know, when we have strawberries that don't ripen up fully, so they're, you know, they don't look quite as red or whatever. So mm-hmm. at the end of September or whatever, and we pick quite a lot of them then for jam or juice.
And when you're talking about juice, would I be right in saying, I'm nearly sure I saw one of your products on the shelf recently, that you also have a kind of a strawberry lemonade?
We actually have a pink lemonade, but that has cranberries in it.
Cranberries, okay.
So maybe I should try one with the strawberries as well. If some years we don't have much strawberries to spare, so I haven't done that much experimenting with them yet.
Right, that's interesting. So there's a little bit of research you can do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Someday the contrast has nothing to do. I doubt if that day exists, does it?
I'm sure Christmas Day or something.
Okay. Just something else, I suppose, just that might help some of our listeners. I just read someplace, I don't know whether it was from Borbia or someplace else, that you should not take the greens off the strawberries until you're ready to use them.
Yes, I certainly wouldn't anyway. Yeah. Years ago, there were some, you know, varieties that you could pick, and they would separate very easily from the hull. And yeah, you know, if you're picking them, you might accidentally or on purpose pick them without the green part. Mm-hmm. But these days, you know, all growers and pickers will be trying to pick them with the stalk on. Just to keep them that bit fresher, because as soon as you separate the stalk, obviously you're exposing the flesh of the strawberry, which will start to go off.
Con, I suppose you're open all the weekend and every day, so anybody listening?
Oh yeah, we're open all the time, exactly. Yeah, we're open open 7 days a week at the moment, and we're picking strawberries 7 days a week, but sure, that only lasts a few weeks, you know what I mean?
So I do.
As in the picking of 7 days a week, which is grand, you know, because you can just have them nice and fresh when people come in.
Okay, well, what I was really going to say is if anybody listening to us this morning and they want to have some nice dessert over the weekend, why not drop down to the apple farm and get some of your lovely strawberries?
Thank you very much, yeah.
Later on in the year, we'll be talking about apples, you and I, but for now, we'll leave it with the strawberries. Con, thanks very much for taking my call this morning. That, listeners, was Con Trass out there in the apple farm just outside Care on the road between Care and Clonmel, and it's always worth the visit to go to the apple farm. You'll definitely come away with some of the products in your basket. Listeners, my next guest this morning is Imelda Walsh, the chairperson of the IFA in North Tipperary. And Imelda's with me to talk about two things very quickly. And that is, we're going to have a chat about the rally that was held in Nina. And of course, there was another one held in Kerr last Saturday. And again, the IFA were up in Dublin protesting with regard to the climate change bill that's going through the Dáil at the moment. Good morning, Imelda, and thanks very much for taking the call.
Good morning, Jim, and good morning to all your listeners.
Okay, I suppose we'll let you start with last Saturday. Good turnout.
Yes, Jim, it was in fact last Friday. Fantastic turnout. It was great to see all the people coming out in support. I suppose farmers, the appreciation of how serious this CAPS negotiations are and wanting to have our voices heard in a dignified way, with a huge turnout in Nina, as they had in Kerr also. And I suppose, Jim, to cut to the fundamentals of it, to say what we're basically saying in relation to this, like, the CAP has moved away from what was originally was to provide cheap, safe food produced in a sustainable way. It has now become more of an environmental scheme, and we're looking at convergence, eco-schemes and redistribution. What we're clearly saying to our Minister, Minister McConnell Logue, in relation to this and to the government, is that the 1.5 billion carbon tax budget, which has been allocated to us in the programme for government, that money has to be ring-fenced. It has to be guaranteed to farmers in an environmental scheme, a real and a sensible environmental scheme that farmers can adhere to, that's given it 150 million over the next 10 years. And also the co-financing in the Pillar 2 schemes, Jim, of up to 57%. We need that money, Jim, to ensure that the suckler cow gets a real payment of up to 300 euros, the ewe gets a 30 euro payment, and our tillage sector needs to be supported. If it's not, Jim, unfortunately, we're going to lose our farmers from the tillage sector. It is getting harder and harder each year for those farmers in the tillage sector to survive, and we don't want to see our tillage sector going the same way as our sugar beet sector, and everything needs to be done in every possible way to ensure that doesn't happen. So then I suppose...
Sorry, Jim,
go ahead.
I was going to ask you, you know, what was the mood of the farmers on the rally?
The mood of the farmers is, I suppose, look, the farmers are extremely happy at the moment in relation to farm gate prices. Milk is good, beef is good, lamb is good at the moment. But there is the concerns in relation to what's being decided at the moment in relation to CAP. Obviously, because we're in the transition period, it's not going to hit farmers' pockets until October 2023. And that's why the fight goes on now. And I know sometimes it can seem that when farm gate prices are good, but it is now the work is going to have to be done in relation to securing that CAP budget and ensuring that we get the maximum flexibility in relation to how those schemes are designed and what works for Ireland. Is different to what's going to work for European countries. And we will be insisting on Minister McConnell Logue putting his shoulders to the wheel. They're back out in Brussels again next weekend and the following week. And when it's hoped that the discussions will come to an end during the Portuguese presidency, which is due to end on the 30th of June. And I think the acceptance is that there will be a deal done, if at all possible, during the Portuguese presidency.
Okay, moving on then to the event that took place on last Wednesday. You were back in Dublin. I know it was a very limited protest, but this time you're protesting against the climate change bill and the way in which carbon is treated as far as the farming community are concerned.
Without a shadow of a doubt, Jim, we have Minister Ryan basically ramming a bill through government without any taking into consideration any of the amendments that we have put forward, and also which other independent TDs have put forward. Like, Jim, basically what we're saying in relation to this, like, we're not climate deniers. We're doing everything possible in relation to making the our whole sector more environmentally friendly and everything else. But we are insisting that there is account taken for our carbon removals in relation to our green grass, our hedgerows and our forests. At the moment, Jim, there's nothing being counted for those. Also, Jim, in relation to biogenic methane, which is a short cycle gas that stays in the atmosphere for 12 to 15 years and is recycled again, unlike fossil fuel gases like carbon dioxide, you know, which last for over 100 years in the atmosphere. And also, Jim, in relation to carbon leakage, if the food isn't produced in a country like Ireland, where we have such a low carbon footprint, it's going to be produced in countries that have a massive high carbon footprint, bearing in mind, Jim, that currently there are hundreds of millions of people in the world starving, and the world population is growing. And we want to insist in relation to the carbon budget allocations that agriculture, that we get our fair share in relation to that, that for we're sequestering on our farms, that our credits are not used in relation to subsidising industry. And we would, the fight continues. On Wednesday last, when we were in Dublin, Jim, it was the first step in the campaign in relation to this. We will not give up on our farming sector. We have a proud tradition in this country of agriculture being the oldest indigenous industry. We have farmed the land for tens of thousands of years, and we will continue to do it for our generation and for generations to come, Jim.
Okay, well, look, thanks for sharing all that with us this week, Imelda. I'm quite sure you and I will be visiting both of these topics in the not-too-distant future. But thanks, Imelda, for coming on this Saturday morning with me. That, listeners, was Imelda Walsh, who is the chairperson of the IFA in North Tipperary, telling us about the rally that was held last Friday, and, of course, then about the protest in Dublin last Wednesday. Listeners, my next guest this morning is John Horrigan. And John is a farmer from Maru in County Limerick. During the past week, John erected a sign on his farm that spells out for us all carbon sequestration. And it's very topical that we should be talking about it. We haven't touched it on this programme as of yet anyway, as a subject on its own. It's something that John feels very strongly about, and he's going to tell us all about it. Good morning, John, and thanks for joining us here on Tip FM.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. Thank you very much indeed.
You're more than welcome. Now, John, I said you were going to talk to us about carbon sequestration.
Well, all I can say is I studied it up as best I can, so I'm purely a layman in the matter. But my understanding of it is that my farm and your farm and everybody else's farm, as well as producing CO2, it also sequesters CO2. It shouldn't have been rocket science for Chagas when they were asked to measure the carbon footprint of farming, to measure what was put out and measure what was taken in, and take one from the other and give us a net carbon footprint, which would be your actual carbon footprint. But they didn't do that. They went along and measured what we were producing, and they said that was it. So what we have is a gross carbon footprint. And according to Board BIA, when they came and did my audit for 2020, first of all, they told me I was a great little boy because I had a very low carbon footprint per kilo of milk produced. But they still said I produced 717 tonnes. And when I emailed them and asked them, are they giving any credit for my trees and hedgerows and grass, they said no. It was a blank no. And so I went to as many people as I could that understood the matter and tried to get as much information as I could about what our trees and our grassland sequesters. Now, we have 200 acres of forestry, which most farmers don't. But as far as I can get from the best information I have, that Sitka spruce will sequester around 3 tonnes per acre per annum. So that's 600 tonnes straight away sequestered. And I got varying figures for grassland, depending on where you were, but it's somewhere between 1 and 2 or 2.5 tonnes per acre again. And again, the figures are a bit hazy because nobody seems to really care about this. People only seem to care about what we're producing, not what we're sequestering. So when I added up my figures anyway, I was allowing 1.5 tonnes per acre for a carbon sequestration of the grassland. I ended up with over 1,000 tonnes carbon sequestered, and I was producing 717, according to Board BIA. So that left me with a net figure of over 300 on the plus side. So I was not only carbon neutral, I was a net carbon sink. Yet, according to the government, I'm a carbon criminal because I'm producing so much CO2. And it's important for every farmer to understand this, that we are entitled to our real carbon footprint, which is a net carbon footprint, not a gross carbon footprint. And I feel the farming organisations have been asleep at the wheel on this matter. And it's going to be the current climate bill that's before the Dáil makes no acknowledgement for our efforts in sequestering carbon. If it goes through as it is, we will be landed with a massive carbon footprint, which is not correct. So we must get a net carbon footprint, or else we're being done left, right and centre. And the more serious thing about this is the future is all about carbon. And if we let this slip and we don't get credit for what we're already doing, we may never get it back. And the government at the moment are charging co-ops like Dairy Gold €45 a tonne for carbon credits. They're selling your carbon credits and my carbon credits for €45 a tonne. And according to the experts, it's going to go to €100 a tonne in no time. So theoretically, my farm is sequestering 1,000 tonnes. That's €100,000 worth of carbon per annum at €100 a tonne. And there's lots of farmers in that situation. You take farmers in the west of Ireland with low stocking rates, farmers down in the Burn, with they produce wonderful beef, and they've loads of hazel on the land. They have every second acre is covered in hazel.
Mm.
In all probability, they're sequestering more than they're producing. If they were allowed their carbon footprint, their real carbon footprint, they could sell their beef as carbon neutral. So that's where I'm coming from, Jim.
Right. And, OK, you say that farming organisations are lagging behind. Now, there's one, I suppose, farming group that's involved in this in a big way, and that is the National Dairy Council. And their CEO is very, very adamant that we should be getting credits for our grassland and for our hedgerows for anybody who has, we'd say, a plantation on their farm. Are we not our own enemies by not highlighting this at every single opportunity that we can?
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. And every time the government says they want to introduce measures and schemes for farmers to get involved in carbon sequestration, we should say, yes, we're very interested, but first give us credit for what we're already doing. And you will find nobody more helpful in going the rest of the way. But until we get acknowledged for what we are already doing, I don't think any farmer should plant a tree or plant a bush or cooperate in any way whatsoever, because they're going to do it if they're allowed. And I don't understand what they're thinking about it is because they say it's a national inventory. Whether it's in my name, your name, or the government's name, it still belongs to us people in the state. I'm an Irishman, so it's not going to a foreigner if I get to own my own carbon credits. So I don't understand why they need to own what is our property.
Right. Now, isn't there an anomaly here? Because if we look at the new REAP scheme, which is an environmental scheme that lowers our carbon footprint. Now, they're able to give us credit for whatever carbon we sequent in that instance, but they will not accept what we already have in the ground prior to that.
Yeah, there is a very serious anomaly there, yes. But it isn't even just what's in the ground, Jim. It's what's in the grass.
I meant the grass, I meant the trees that you'd have and the hedgerows. They're not giving us anything for that. But they're trying to encourage us with what I suppose some farming organisations have said is just a kind of a childish scheme, really, to try to get us to do some environmental things. But as you quite rightly said, we're getting no credit for what we're doing, what we have been doing.
Yeah, and what I also worry about is the carbon cycle is just that. It's a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Cows produce methane, and CO2 is produced by farming. It goes up into the air. It's taken back out of the air by the trees, the grass, and it goes into the grass, and it goes back into the cow. In fact, if you look at any of David Attenborough's excellent programs, he lays the blame for global warming, and that's what we're talking about. It isn't just CO2, it's global warming
of course,
is the issue. He lays the blame on burning fossil fuels, and he very much states that ruminants are an integral part of the grassland carbon cycle. The great grasslands of the world that are all over the place, they will not function unless there are ruminants grazing them, because grass will sequester carbon while it's growing. But the moment it stops growing, it stops sequestering. So it must be eaten and put into the cow for more to grow. And there, a simplistic view, I suppose, is that the wonderful carbon cycle that we're involved in, and is more especially applicable to Ireland because we're a grassland-based system. I don't know enough about the feedlot system to comment on it, but I do know that our system is a fantastically sustainable grassland system. And it's cyclical. That's the great thing about it. We our cows eat the grass. They produce the CO2. It goes up into the air. Our grass and our hedges and our trees take it back down again. And there are wonderful byproducts from that cycle called meat and milk And I also wonder about what would our carbon footprint be if we were allowed everything. I've talked to a lot of scientists on this, and they reckon that it's in Ireland now, in a grassland system, that the animal and the CO2 the animal produces and the sequestered is probably in balance. The only thing farmers are actually genuinely liable for is the fuel we burn and the fertilizer we put on the land. They are the biggest sources of CO2 and greenhouse gases that we are using. The animal themselves are probably in balance. And when you think about it, I mean, according to today's thinking and metrics, if cattle are able to produce sufficient surplus CO2, the surplus CO2 that they're talking about, they would be able to fry the earth. The amount of cattle that was on the world, if you take the North America, for instance, for 10,000 years, until they shot all the buffalo, there was about 70 million buffalo roaming North America since the last ice age. That's 10,000 years. Well, according to today's metrics, that herd alone would be capable of sufficient build-up of CO2 to fry the world in about 200 years. And it never happened. In 10,000 years, there was no build-up. So blaming the cow is a sideshow. What is most serious about this is that global warming is real and it's happening and it's here. And diverting attention away from the real source of it onto farmers is going to actually only delay the process of doing something real and concrete about it. That's possibly even more serious than the fact that we're being set up.
Okay. John, on that serious note, I'll have to say goodbye to you. But look, I want to thank you ever so much for educating our farmers here in Tipperary about this serious issue as far as the livelihood of farmers in Tipperary and indeed in the country as a whole. That, listeners, was John Horrigan, who is farmer from Maru in County Limerick. That, listeners, is Ag Report for this week. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll join me, Jim Finn, at the same time next week for another Ag Report on Tip FM. Coming up next is the news at 10 o'clock. And after that, Eamon De Wire presents Down Your Way.